can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know.
We now join Dan in the second half of his talk on the National Electric Code.
Some people will take the plastic, I call them 4x4, 6x6 kind of boxes and run a bunch of conduits from a bunch of lights into them, drilling holes into the plastic 6x6 boxes as needed to attach to it and use that as a junction box for light. That's not acceptable. It has to be an approved junction box. Other things that are done wrong is the bottom of that junction box, the approved listed junction box, has to be at least 4 inches above the ground to the bottom of the box. And it also has to be at least 4 feet away from the water's edge. So we see them frequently where that box is right at ground level or an inch or so above ground level. Like the box was put in before the deck was done. Before the landscaping was done, nobody shot any elevations to it. They just kind of did what they did. By the time the deck is done and the landscaping is done, that thing is basically almost buried in the ground. So we need to be cognizant of that and ensure when we're building or if we're doing some kind of significant repair to the electrical lighting systems that those bottoms of those boxes are going to be 4 inches above whatever the finished grade is when it's all done, not just when you're out there. Flush mount deck boxes, the rage back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, I can't tell you how many pools were built with those. The current code says that a flush mount box can only be used in a low voltage application. So if you're above 15 volts, it's no good, can't use it. And if it is used, it has to be filled with a potting compound. And that flush box has to be 4 feet away from water's edge. I would venture to say most of us opening up and working on lighting, we open up a flush mount box. There is probably almost never potting compound in that box. And very frequently, because of the pool's age and such, it's nowhere near 4 feet away from the pool. We see them all the time right under a diving board, maybe a foot or 18 inches back from the pool. No potting compound. Oftentimes, that's even high voltage light that's in that thing. So got to be, concerned with replacing a light or working on a light with an unsafe environment. And in those environments, I would say that that's not something that you can work on, that a modification has to be made to bring that up to code. Lighting is probably one of the easiest ways for electricity to get in the pool. And the last thing you want to do is be the one that was the last one to touch something and have something go wrong and something get hurt. Bonding of the pool, 680.26 section, that bonding is probably one of the most, in some ways, confusing part of the electrical aspect of the pool in terms of how do you bond it, what needs to be bonded, when we do certain things and we break that bond, what do we do? And what's the difference between bonding and grounding, because they are not the same thing. So bonding occurs to all of the metal components of the pool. The pool shell, if it's a gunite pool, you've got rebar in it. The rebar and that gunite is bonded all throughout. If you have a concrete deck that has wire mesh, the wire mesh is bonded. The bonding is done with a solid copper number 8 wire that's bare. There's no casing on it. And it runs around the perimeter of the pool, hitting everything metal. So if you have metal light niches, ladder and handrail anchors that are aluminum or bronze or whatnot, anything metal in that has to be bonded together. again, the mesh, if there's mesh in a concrete deck, wire mesh, that has to be bonded together. And that bond wire goes around the pool hitting all those things, and then it runs back. If you have a diving jig for the diving board before the deck is poured, that's got to be hit with that wire. The bonding wire then runs back to the equipment pad, just buried through the yard. It's not in conduit or anything like that. It's buried back to the yard, and it runs through all of the equipment and connects to everything metal there. So your pump, your heater. There aren't many metal stainless steel filters in use anymore today, but back in the day, that was another thing that was bonded. The electrical control boxes that are metal. Heat pumps. I mean, anything that's out there that has metal in it has to be bonded. And that's where it ends.
Join the Council for the Model Aquatic Health Code, aka CMAC. CMAC is a member-driven organization that keeps the Model Aquatic Health Code sustainable, current, and complete. Your expertise is needed. Learn more at CMAC.org. That's CMAHC.org.
Oftentimes we'll see, and we even have inspectors that require us to put a grounding stake in at the equipment pad and attach that bond wire to a grounding stake, which is wrong. That then is grounding the bond system. And to be honest, that can create a problem in the entire electrical system that can create potential harm where it otherwise wouldn't exist. Not going into it too deep, but if your grounding rod at the equipment pad of the pool has a lesser resistance than the ground rod at the house, theoretically you could have shorts of electricity in the house that would otherwise be carried to the house ground, end up going out through the pool equipment bond to the grounding rod at the pool equipment, essentially energizing that bonding grid that you don't want to have energized. And, you can have problems there. So I've actually personally encountered where that exact scenario had existed on a pool that was 10 or 12 years old. And then there was electrical current in the pool and found that disconnecting that bond wire from the ground rod at the pool equipment pad stopped that voltage from going into the pool. The source of the voltage, I don't know, but it was coming from the house somewhere back feeding through the feed out to the pool from the house. We've got two hots of neutral on the ground, and this particular installation was all hard wall metal conduit between the house and the pool equipment. So something in that house was shorted and energizing the ground of the house, which was then carried out to the pool because the pool was only a dozen years old and the house was 40 plus years old. And the ground to the ground rod at the house was not the lowest resistance, the easiest path, if you will, to ground. So think of all that. If you have a pool that doesn't have the water that's in the pool itself has to be bonded as well. So if you have a pool that has no metal light niches, for example, that's often how the water in the pool is bonded, because that metal niche is bonded, goes back to the pad, everything we just talked about. But if you don't have, you got plastic niches, or you're using smaller, Pentair micro brights that are nicheless, or any one of the, Jandy's version or Hayward's version, there is no metal to water contact there for that bond. So you have to do something else then to bond the water itself. You can get skimmers that have water bonds in them. You can actually buy a skimmer water bond to add to most skimmers. So essentially a metal plate that is in the bottom of the skimmer with a grounding wire that comes up through the skimmer body up high above water level before going out where you attach a ground wire. So it has that. There are also water bonds that can be installed in the plumbing at the equipment. I don't really understand those, because if you ever have a loss of prime, the potential of that fixture in the plumbing being devoid of water and not being continuous back to the pool, I think is a potential loss of that water bond. But they do have them, and they are listed as approved water bond devices. CMP has one that also works as a sacrificial anode, so it's doing double duty. fiberglass pools almost always have to have some sort of separate water bond, because I don't know of anybody using metal large niches on fiberglass pools. And today, most vinyl pool builders are going to smaller, as I said, micro-bright type of lights without any metal to water contact. So, and the purpose of bonding basically is to create the bird on the wire effect, right? Birds land on high tension power lines all the time, and they don't burst into flame or become, you know, roasted duck as soon as they land on it. And the reason for that is that they are not grounded. They're not touching anything but that wire. The power just is one with them, and it doesn't cause them any harm. If they were to be able to reach to the ground while standing on that wire and touch the ground, then their body would create the pathway of that current through them to ground. And then you would have, you know, roasted bird for a snack there. Same kind of thing with swimming pools. So someone's in the pool, there's some sort of voltage leak into the pool. When they're in the pool water swimming around, they're probably not feeling it because it's going right through them. It's a bird on a wire. They're on the wire, the water being that wire. They go to get out of the pool, and if they reach up and grab a handrail or a ladder that's metal, that's in an anchor, that's in the ground or into the deck, that doesn't have a bond wire to it, the contact between that anchor and the earth underneath that deck is a pathway to ground. So as soon as you grab that handrail or ladder, the electric current that's in the water, what they call an equipotential bond of everything involved in the pool. So it has equal potential of that current, and it essentially creates that an extension of the bird on the wire. So the bond between the ladder and the anchor is intact. Between that anchor and the deck, the anchor and the pool, if it's a metallic pool or rebar in the pool, and that anchor and the equipment, all of the potential is equal. So it's still that bird on the wire. You're in the pool, you're surrounded by the current and the water. You grab the rail, it's already got the same potential as everything else. You walk on the deck. You electricity will pass through concrete or paver brick decking. It all has the same potential. And with that, that equipotential grid, if you will, extends 3 feet out from the inside edge of the pool. So that the bond wire that runs around and grabs all the stuff on the pool, let's say that you've got a ladder and a handrail on one side of the pool and you don't have anything else metal. It's a fiberglass pool. If all you did was connect that ladder and rail to one another and run it back to the equipment, you're not providing a safe 3-foot perimeter all the way around the pool. So that bare copper 8-gauge wire, solid copper wire, has to go not just down the one side of the pool from the ladder to the handrail, but all the way around that pool and then back. So it's a complete circle. Whether there's decking or no decking, if there's a planter that comes right up to the pool's edge, that wire has to be underneath that planter area. The wire has to be between 18 and 24 inches back from the water's edge. It can't be a foot. It can't be 3 feet. It's 18 to 24 inches. And if the deck does not have, say it's a paver brick deck or some sort of a natural stone, blue stone or something like that, that wire has to be 4 to 6 inches below the subgrade of that paver brick. So it's within the compacted stone base running around the pool in an 18 to 24 inch perimeter. So, all right, we're mostly service people that listen to me. I get that. This doesn't bother me. I'm not building a pool. Well, many of us get into doing other things, though. A lot of pools are built with aluminum anchors for handrails, which are the worst thing in the world to use because they oxidize, they expand, they end up creating an environment where that anchor locks onto the rail, it can't be removed out, or ultimately the aluminum fails and it cracks and the anchor is junk. So that aluminum anchor that was embedded in the concrete has a bond wire on it. How do we go out and fix that? Well, most people will go out with a 4-inch core drill, concrete drill, and core that anchor out, drop a new anchor in the hole, use some anchoring cement to cement that anchor into the hole, and put your rail or ladder back into it. You're all done, right? No, you're not. You just created a problem. What happened to the bond wire that was on that old anchor? When you core drilled around that thing, that core drill probably went right through that wire on both sides, severing it, actually causing a disconnect between it and potentially the rest of the bond of the pool. And that anchor is now not bonded. So we have to have some more thought about what we're doing when we're doing those types of repairs to ensure we're not damaging this equipotential bond that is really the primary safety preventing people from being electrocuted in swimming pools. GFIs, they're to me secondary to the equipotential bond and the bonding grid of the pool. GFIs can fail, although they almost never fail in an on position. We have seen that happen. And, you know, it's a manufactured item. So once a bond wire is installed, there's no mechanical, electrical function. You know, it's not moving. It's not operating. It just is. So unless it's disturbed or destroyed, it's doing its job. We don't want to force the issue and break that thing and cause problems. So you got to think about that. How are we going to replace these anchors now and ensure that the integrity of that equipotential bond is maintained? And there are a lot of different ways you can do that. Reach out to me if you don't know of any, and I can certainly, you know, help you with some ideas as to how you can accomplish that. So bonding, important stuff. Couple other things they talk about, automatic cover motors. I know, you know, last week the ISPSC and barriers and all that, we talk about covers, but the motors for those covers have to be bonded, as do any metal components that cover is involved with. So, you know, often you've got an aluminum lid over the recessed pit, if you will, that the mechanism is in, has to be bonded. The leading edge across the front of the cover has to be bonded. Cover manufacturers provide methods to do that are exactly as they should be, functional and easy to do, but can't tell you how many times I've seen where the leading edge is not actually attached to the metal bonding that's installed with the cover, so that leading edge is not truly bonded. That's a problem. What else? That's, I guess, the bulk of it that we get into. I mean, the code, again, it's the NEC 2023 code. Section 680 deals with swimming pools. They recently, for I think it was 23, modified certain areas of it to better define classifications of GFIs that are needed. There used to not be GFIs for three-phase power, 480 volt, that kind of stuff. Now there are. There are different classification than what most of us see in residential use. Most of residential stuff is what's considered a Class A GFCI. And the classifications have to do mostly, I believe, with the milliamp ratings that force them to trip. And a Class A GFCI is, it'll trip at 6 milliamps, which is less than what will cause the majority of people to have any kind of physical harm or ailments by current passing through them. If you're to Google that kind of stuff, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it might be like 10 milliamps or 20 milliamps is something that can throw someone into cardiac arrest. I could be wrong, but it's not much. And, it's not the voltage that kills, it's the amperage, and we're really dealing with milliamps before it starts affecting us. So at any rate, NEC section 680, if you don't know about it, look into it. Again, Google Mike Holt, H-O-L-T, find his website. Lots of good, easy to review information out there. A lot of good graphical stuff, PDFs you can download, keep them on your phone or print them out and throw them in your binder in the truck, that kind of stuff, to be able to refer back to it. And as always, thanks for listening. If there's anything that you'd like to add, certainly do so in the comments after we get this thing posted out there, or reach out to us, talkingpools@gmail.com. And with that, I am going to sign off, and we'll talk to you again in a week. Thanks.
I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.